Gerhardt's back.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
From NJ1015.com, this is the new Jim Gerhardt Podcast.
All right, good morning, New Jersey. It's time for the Jim Gerhardt Podcast, and we are practicing our social distancing. It's Bob Williams and our humble host, Jim Gerhardt. Hey, Jim.
Yeah. For those who might be curious, how many miles are we apart now? 50 miles.
Yeah.
This roof separation.
So
you got your mask on.
I think I'm okay for now.
I tell you something very interesting. When the probably about a month ago or a few weeks ago, when this mask madness first started, that everybody should wear a mask. You couldn't find a mask. Now they're talking about the billions of them they're grinding out. But you couldn't find a mask, the triple N, what is it, M95 or whatever it is, mask.
The one I got right here. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, we wonder where are we going to get masks? Well, there's no place. Nobody has masks. You know, Amazon's out. Everybody's out of masks. I went in the garage just messing around looking for something else. And there was a box up there that I'd totally forgotten about. And it said triple M, M95 masks. And I opened it, and I had a box of 24 of them.
Oh, my gosh.
It was amazing. And that's one of the miracles of this. The other miracle, which I will jump into, was the toilet paper. Who would have thought?
You had a bunch on hand?
Well, no, I didn't. Normally I do, because I go to Lowe's and they have these huge bundles of it. But somehow I may not have bought one since last summer, and we're just about out. Well, what happened was Nancy went to Lowe's to get dog food. And this was at the height of the toilet paper frenzy. And she just happened to be checking out when a truckload of toilet paper came in. Just happened. And so she comes out of there and it was a mad rush for it. But she just happened to be standing right by it when they brought it out. And we got the toilet paper. But the funny thing is, this was a Scott brand. I never knew of, but it's a fairly large roll, but nothing extraordinary. It wasn't a roll of toilet paper on steroids. But anyway, we got it here. But I will swear, it never seems to run out. And I have a big roll of this. I think it's been sitting there for a month or 3 weeks or so. And it's like, I don't mean this disrespectful at all, and I know it's a terrible analogy, but it's kind of like the menorah that ran out of oil. And it kept going. Now, before you think I'm being scatological about this, that certainly is one use of this. Most toilet paper I use to blow my nose. I'm living in a house full of animals, which I love, and have sort of a mild allergy thing. So I'm going around half the day sniffling. So, but anyway, the thing is that some amazing things, little small things like that happen. So I've been out once. I went to the market. There was ShopRite. Haynesport, and what was it, 2 days ago, and first time I'd been out for weeks, and they had this so well organized.
Yes.
Now I understand the governor has talked about the markets restricting to half the normal load.
Yeah, they've
been doing that for a week.
A lot of the retail places have done a very, very good job. Up here, I can speak from experience. I mean, they've got workers outside monitoring how many people go into the store at one time. And now, I mean, you got to ask the question, is this more of the governor overreaching and just going beyond what needs to be done to safely protect the public? Because now you're even creating even longer lines. If you have 150 people allowed in the store at one time, now you're down to, what, 75? And that's going to increase the wait time outside the store. Because, you know, like I say, I think some of these stores have done a very good job.
They have. I shall recuse myself now of anything political. I'm so sick of it constantly. The political politicization, whatever the word is, of a calamity. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. So I will come out of the closet with my grip hat, which, of course, has been a holy tradition. Get rid of incumbent politicians. You know, everybody dumping, you dump on the president, of course, the media and the left. We dump on the governor, everybody, not everybody, but people are dumping on this governor. It's like knee-jerk reaction with anything that's unpleasant. You look around for some political figure at the top and start on him. We got stung, I did anyway, 30 years ago. We got into this same frame with Governor Florio. You remember that, Bob?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it was thinking like, it's almost like the left media now and President Trump. There's nothing he can do right. Anything he says, anything he does, they jump at and criticize. We were doing that to Governor Florio. And looking back, it became a habit. I understand a little bit of groupthink from that. And I think if all of us at the radio station who were right out in front, you know, beating the drum, throwing toilet paper at the State House with the best of them, and you get carried away so you do not think outside that particular box, and it's a small box. No matter what happened, it was dump Florio.
Yeah.
And I think the reason for it was at that time, people had gotten completely sick of politicians and politics. And it was not the governor, I think, that kept us going, because the only criticism of Governor Florio was a tax increase, which by today's standards was minuscule. It's like $3 billion. Mm. But I think people had gotten tired of the system. And I think Jim Florio was a victim of the system, because he ended up kind of surrounded by people who were getting negative news. And it seemed like everybody in his entourage, except him, was on the take in some form or another. And sometimes it was just so glaring. It was the system. But anyway, getting back, sometimes when I hear all of this dumping on the head political figure, I can kind of understand it, because we did it without thinking. It was kind of knee-jerk. And then if you didn't do it, if you said anything positive about the governor, then your peers would right. get after you.
That's right.
You remember those days.
Yeah, and we speak of your party. Yeah.
Yeah. So, so much. It's kind of like the Matrix. I'm getting a feeling here. There's a certain surreal quality about this. Here I sit, a stately Gerhardt Manor, fat, dumb, and happy, looking out, and the trees are coming out with leaves. We had beautiful blooms on the weeping pink cherry trees, the magnolias and all, and the blossoms have come and gone, and they're leafing out. The forsythia has been out for a while. Everything, the lawn's coming up, everything, and the weather's beautiful. And on the other hand, you look out the window, this is what you see. And that you turn on any kind of media, everything's gone to hell.
Right. And it depends on who you're looking at. It's like, it's either the glass is half full or the glass is half empty. It's like people are doom and gloom and other people are trying to be hopeful about the future. But it's some people are just like poo-pooing it to the point where, the hell with it all. We're going to be stuck here for months. I mean, I'm a hopeful person. I hope that it's going to end sooner than later, as probably most people do.
So, again, it's remember, I was thinking this morning, this is terrible. I'm not suggesting this, but this is just ripe for conspiracy theories. Remember, what is it, Wag the Dog, the movie?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And who is it? Robert De Niro, I think, was in it. But the point is that the government was up to something, and there was not a real war going on. It was just the media was carrying these things that were filmed, in studios, battles. The unreality of it sometimes just rather hits you. Yeah. And you see these stories, and it's what is going on apparently is overwhelming, but we don't see it, except virtually.
Right.
So it's kind of hard sometimes to remember, keep in mind just, what exactly is going on out there. It's I get into this in a while. I know there's other things, but I decided to go to the Center for Disease Control's website and get a list of. I think what I Googled up was influenza deaths, the history of it in this country, and what I came up with is utterly amazing. That we have had, the bottom line is that every year, and I picked this up from 2010, 2011 flu season, there were many more deaths from influenza than there have been so far now. And this has been every year since then. So it has raised the question, and I've not heard anybody address this. I hope you have, and I hope somebody has. How much of this... if this is a normal influenza season, I know we have the coronavirus, But there are other influenza strains out there, and there have been. There's no reason to think they've gone away. So what has been the effect of that? Have we had a, what do you call it, the everyday domestic usual influenza run this year or not? I don't know.
Well, it certainly feels like they've overestimated a lot of the projections, and they're giving credit to the self-sequestering and the social distancing for keeping those numbers down, and all the better. I mean, but still, you know, you have a valid point.
Well, like I say, in 2013 flu season, 34 million people in New Jersey had reported having the flu. That's 10% of the population. And the deaths are listed as, according to the Center for Disease Control, 2012-2013 in New Jersey, 43,000 deaths from influenza. What are we now with this? Nothing anywhere near that. And that was for the country. There's something here that is, well, curious, to say the least.
Right. I mean, I think there's a lot of finger pointing now going back to China, because were they truthful in when the disease was at its inception or the effects of it? You got to look back. So many things that are to be questioned, like that doctor that died back in China back in November or December, and we never heard anything more about him. And another physician over there disappeared, and we haven't heard anything about her whereabouts or her well-being. So there's been a lot of questions that need to be answered, finger pointing.
That, you know, that constantly comes up, and that's the political game or part of it that's being played. I could go on in depth about this, but I won't. The press conferences that they held toward the end of the day, when they go through, they have the president, they have the various experts, members of the team, and it comes on, and the president gets up, and this to me is the most stressful part of this whole thing, is trying to watch that, in spite of this wanting to get up and yell, be quiet and sit down, let these people talk. But he goes on and on and on. The other day he went for an hour.
Yeah, he needs to shorten it up a little bit and let the doctors talk and let the secretaries or whoever's speaking.
Yeah, but I'm looking behind him, and there is the attorney general one day. He's standing right behind the president. The president's droning on and on, repeating himself, going on, you know, pounding his chest, you know, the obligatory patting himself on the back. He's going on and on with it. And here is Mr. Barr, the attorney general, and he looks like either he's about to drop,
right,
and he's clearly very uncomfortable, or he wants to raise his hand and say, Mr. President, I have to go potty.
I have a personal emergency, Mr. President.
I want to see him back there, somebody just doing the Charleston, because they can't hold it anymore. The chorus line will break out.
Yeah, with his legs crossed. And,
but the thing that's most maddening is this so-called press corps sitting out there. Remember the day a lady named Helen Thomas was the, I think, the AP. She was the dean.
The grand madame of the press corps.
And you'd see this, go back to Reagan, or just as recently as the Bushes, and even Obama.
And she would get the first question.
The journalists were mature people, and they were generally very intelligent people, experienced people, and they had a historic knowledge to use as a background for their conversations with the president. Now you don't have that. This looks like a bunch of just recently post-pubescent twits who are set in there to try to poke sticks into the president's cage. And it gets to be utterly absurd. And the old thing, what did you know when? I would like to make a statement. And I don't care a rat's patootie who said what when. I'm only interested in information that helps me protect my patootie. And I'd like them to get on with the information. The asinine, spiteful nitpicking by this immature gaggle is ridiculous. And this is not designed to elicit useful information, because most of these questions have absolutely nothing to do with anything useful. They're beating, well, I read this, I saw this, you know. Mr. President, in effect, they're saying, how much money are you making on this, pushing this drug? You must have interest in it. And one yesterday was said, well, you sent so many ventilators to this state. You didn't send only 100 to Colorado. Is this because they have more political connection with the president? Who cares? keep that somewhere else. But it shows what's going on with the media. Now, and the president encourages it by having question and answer period. For what purpose? Nobody's asking anything relevant. You've got the greatest experts in the industry standing up there behind you. Let them tell us what's going on.
I think
I'm not interested in who's doing something when.
They could get that in within 30 or 45 minutes, and everybody could be on with their day and, you know, with the updates, and then everybody can go to dinner. But it's like instead they're making it into an odyssey for like 2 hours or something. And like you said, you know, it's a game of gotcha. The reporters are trying to get the president, and the president has got his back up, and he's ready to say gotcha back. And it's just, it's a game of cat and mouse up there. It's really just not productive. I mean, they've really
The vice president, who's behaving nobly.
Yes.
It is interesting. Governor Cuomo, I could sit there and watch and get very much absorbed in. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure probably there are other people, too. But those are the two heads of government that appear most frequently.
Now, do you see a difference between the approaches of Governor Cuomo and our own Governor Murphy in their press briefings and how they're addressing the crisis?
Truth be told, I have not seen a Murphy press briefing. And I assume I'm giving the man credit for doing what he perceives to be best in the interest of the people. And part of it is I just resent and resist and feel so guilty for having participated in one of these knee-jerk attacks on the governor or the president. I mean, it's just gotten too doggone far. And as far as the stupid questions they asked and they want to ask, or people do, or the media, when is this going to be over? Nobody knows.
Right.
God knows, you know, if you want. But shortened, nobody does.
I think all of these press briefings in general just need to be shortened up. I mean, it's established that we're in this, and we're in this for the long run. Just give us the updates every day, you know. I mean, and just try to keep your comments to a minimum, because people want to go on with their lives. They just can't be consumed with this. We know it's there. We know it's the new norm. We're stuck in this. We're stuck being quarantined. Why does it need to be drummed into our heads every day for an hour, hour and a half? And most of these things are running at least an hour.
Well, now here is the problem. You know the old saying that an idle hand's the devil's workshop. Well, media now is the devil's workshop. And this is not because these people are little with Beelzebubs or Mephistopheles running around, the evil people. It's because they have to fill 24 hours a day with this one subject. Now, no matter what it is, you're going to run out of news. And so they have to fill the time. So they just constantly, constantly harp on this 24 hours a day. And consequently, they are beating dead issues. They're bringing up things that are irrelevant. And it just leads to confusion, at least on my part, watching it.
Yeah.
But again, think if you had to spend 24 hours a day on this subject. Now, we could spend 20 minutes, and there's more to come if you want, but suppose you had to do it for 24 hours and nothing's happening.
Right.
So you're dredging up.
And just you
grasp at any straw to hang on just to keep it going for a few more minutes. The guests, I saw for the first time, we've talked about this for 3 weeks, and I've talked about it and people have for years. The relationship of nutrition, essentially, and the health of the body, your natural defenses, your antibodies, the health of them is the biggest defense you have against this. And I finally saw two doctors, two learned physicians, saying the same thing, as with big eyes, as though this is an enormous discovery, that the people who are worst afflicted by this seem to be people whose bodies are rather severely compromised with one thing or another. Mostly, it turns out to be diabetes, the results of obesity, or other things. COPD, pulmonary type difficulties. And so many people have it. Look at the very high percentage of people in this country with diabetes. which has been not 100%, but certainly to a large extent related to obesity and the American diet, because we're actually eating a diet that is pretty well poisoned for us, not on purpose, but you have to do this because of our food distribution system. Things have to last forever by the time they get shipped. You're not just running down the street to the farmer and plucking fresh rutabagas out of his garden. These have come up from Chile or someplace, and they've been sitting around in a boxcar for months, probably, that you get. And it's not helping, but it's something to think about. And to me, it's one of the things, the great hopeful things that come out of this, other than the legendary reset in our attitudes and our that I talk about, is that people will say, recognize the fact that the best defense you have against this is already in you. You have it. But we're compromising it constantly by what we put into the body. The body, the defense system is spending full time getting rid of the crap we're putting in it.
Yeah.
And then something like this comes along. So how it comes out, I do not know. I know, and again, I hope this is not true, but this this politics of the separation of different groups, what is it, the identity politics, they're calling it. And you're getting into that. The Chinese are playing it like Heifetz played the violin, you know, sort of weakening our resolve. But now one of the big things that's come up, and I never thought of this, is the fact they say the African-American community is being harder hit. Now, and the reason that's given by the experts, not by the president, and I'm sure there'll be people being resentful of this, that said that generally speaking, their health is more frequently, percentage-wise, related to the population, more compromised because of the lack of the availability of some nutritious food. You go into one of your large areas, you can't find a greengrocer. I talk about the rutabaga getting there in a boxcar a month late. It never gets to some of these communities, so you're left with junk food, which is one of the worst things you can put in your body. So, but I was thinking, and again, rather sardonically, I think, that now that if that's a fact, and I don't doubt that the doctors who are saying that are correct, and this is something you're going to have to deal with and work on. But the ultimate work on that is to restore, bring the health level up through making available somehow the type of foods that feed the resistance system in you. And live on junk burgers. So, but I was thinking, P.J. O'Rourke, the writer, had written one time, and this was supposed to be the big headline in the paper the day before the asteroid hit or whatever it was. The day before, the headline says, "World ends tomorrow. Poor and minorities hardest hit." But he was pointing out at that time the unfortunate, tragic separation of us from one or another, based on ethnic or ideological lines, which is pretty much tearing us apart. And again, you talk about conspiracy theories. The Chinese obviously have ambitions to become the tall hog at the trough,
right.
Sit in the political catbird seat in the world of economics and politics. And boy, are they playing this one. So you could make a point is that if they do not deserve a finger of blame wagged at them, the fickle finger of fate or, whatever it is, then at least they are jumping on it, the party, not the people, but the party is jumping on this to certainly do damage to us. Because look at the economy. This is frightening when you think about the ramifications of this. So I don't have an answer, but there's nothing like it. I made a note here, and I was just thinking that someday, think of this, we'll all be sitting around telling our grandchildren about the great coronavirus of 2020 and how we braved the dangers and the privations and how brave we were and how we licked this. And they'll look at us like we look at those talking about the privations from the years before, the Great Depression, and say, and they'll yawn and they'll say, man, and old geezer's at it again. Tell him to go sit down and sit there and tell lies with his peer,
Hey, so, before we wrap, I just want to say congratulations to a Boy Scout from North Jersey. I don't know what troop, Alex Saldana, and he is a bugler for his troop, and he took it upon himself to go visit that veterans home where several veterans passed away from the virus this week. What a great thing for a 13-year-old to do. That is just so, you know, what a wonderful thing. Well, to Alex.
A lot of that you see pick up across the country going on. Hang on a second, Nan. Okay, bring Manfred up. Can I bring Manfred up to say hello?
Sure. Come on.
I think we got you. We'll stretch the time here a second.
All right. Yeah. And so while we're waiting for Manfred tonight at 7 o'clock, Eric Scott's back on the air with a coronavirus special town hall. This week they're going to talk about the economic impacts of the virus and the self-quarantine. I'll have a panel of experts tonight live on New Jersey 101.5 on the app and on the Facebook page and 7 o'clock tonight with Eric and his panel of experts.
Well, bring Gibson. We got a bunch of them.
Oh, you got the whole group coming. Okay.
Morning. Yeah, because that's from here. Well, just bring him up. Manfred's getting camera shot.
Yeah,
Manfred, you'll notice here he is. Here he is. Here's, come here, Manfred. Come here, babe.
Hey, man.
Look at the mighty wonder dog here. It's my boy.
This is my boy.
Come here, Nan. You too. Dog Wrangler doesn't want to come. Okay, here, Manfred. One more time.
Yeah, you
can. It's such a sweet guy. Yep. Hi, Manfred.
Isn't he so? Smile, Manfred. Smile. There he goes.
How old?
Shark smile. Manfred does shark smiles. There he goes. Okay.
Is he about a year and a half old? How old is he?
He's approaching 2 years old. He's a little over 100 pounds now.
Okay.
And he's got a brother who's bigger than he is. Yeah. Oh, now he's got a light.
Now he wants to be part of the show. So
He's a ham.
So we'll be back next week, everybody, 10:30 on Thursdays. It's our Facebook Live podcast. You can catch the podcast on demand right here at NJ1015.com and on our Facebook page. Jim, have a great week.
Down, relax, and de-stress yourself. The biggest thing you can do, try to.